Good morning, everyone. Today, Wednesday, July 31st, is the 332nd day of war abroad. At this hour, each weekday morning, the National Broadcasting Company brings you the latest communiques, claims, and counterclaims of the belligerents direct from Europe. This morning, you're to hear from NBC war reporters in London and Berlin in that order. And immediately following the reports from Europe, you will hear from NBC's Observer in Washington. First, let's hear from NBC's staff in Great Britain. Go ahead, London.
This is London, a little after 1 o'clock. Fred Bates speaking. Enemy raiders visited several parts of England and Wales last night. They dropped a few bombs in the southeast and southwest of England and in South Wales. There was little damage done. This morning, a town in Wales had a three-hour raid. Only four bombs were dropped. There were no casualties and little damage. In another Welsh town, nine bombs were dropped without doing damage or causing casualties. A single plane attacked shipping off the southeast coast of England this morning, but was driven off. The Japanese embassy here in London have sent off to Tokyo the British government's protest about the detention of 11 British subjects. The spokesman of the embassy said a few minutes ago that Lord Halifax had requested the cooperation of Japan in settling this incident rather than protesting vigorously about it. Lord Halifax, a spokesman said, pointed out that public opinion in this country against Japan was rising and requested Mr. Shigemitsu, the ambassador here, to support him in trying to ease the situation. The spokesman, however, pointed out a curious and interesting technical point in the machinery of the Japanese government. He emphasized that regardless of what protests were made by Britain to the Japanese Foreign Office, the Foreign Office in Tokyo did not have it in its power to release the Britons. They can only be released, the spokesman said, by the Minister of Justice. And all Britain could hope to do by protesting to the Foreign Office was to enlist the support of that section of the government in to procure the release. It's just been announced here that two of the Britons who were arrested have been released. There's been one further arrest, so according to this report, there are still 11 in custody. Editorial opinion supports the extended blockade announced in the House of Commons yesterday. The general feeling is one of regret that France must be included in the list of blockaded areas. There's a demand, too, in one editorial at least, to tell the French, to explain the reason for the blockade to the French people by every possible means. Observers here are wondering why the whole position wasn't explained earlier. Measures such as this are not decided overnight. And even now, the real thorn in the thumb is not pulled out. It's not dragged out into the open for public inspection. It is inherent in what Mr. Dalton said yesterday. But unless explained again and again, risks unpleasant surprises in the form of public reactions. The system now in force, which Britain intends to extend and intensify, is designed to allow a neutral to receive, through the blockade, its normal imports necessary for its own domestic use, and nothing more. There's reason to believe that the real domestic needs of certain European countries this year in foodstuffs will exceed their normal requirements. Harvests are down on the continent by 30%, according to Lord Wilton, the Minister of Food. And according to him, German reserves of edible fats are down 50%. Here in Britain, calcium and vitamin B are now being put into white bread to give it the health value of whole wheat. Everything points to food shortage. That means a humanitarian response, immediate and instinctive, by relief organizations. Help which is usually welcomed. Today, their help would defeat the blockade. The important thing to realize is that relief shipments of food to neutrals, if they are in excess of the amounts fixed for the country concerned, will not be allowed in if the blockade can stop them. Relief shipments to countries under German control or occupied by German forces will be treated just like any other shipments to that country or to those countries. They will be kept out if the blockade can keep them out. This is a total war measure, and there's no place for relief while total warfare is being waged. If people suffer, Germany will say that it's because of the British blockade, undoubtedly. And Britain, undoubtedly, will say that to protect her own people, she has decided to blockade, to apply a blockade as tight as the one being attempted against her. The war of tightened belts is on in earnest. It may be decided by the side which can take up the most notches and stand it the longest. Meanwhile, the other kind of war is not lost sight of. Reports from France and the continent say that the final German preparations for invasion are being made. They're being made here for reception. There's no doubt about that. This is London, returning to you to the National Broadcasting Company, New York.
The report just heard came from London. Next, shortwave radio spans the Atlantic Ocean, the British Isles and the North Sea, and the Nazi-occupied Low Countries to bring you NBC's report of the late news in the Reich.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. Today is the last day of the 11th month of the present war, and in comparison to the three preceding months, it has been a dull one. The papers are sometimes hard put to it here to find material to fill their pages. For instance, today they report a decoration given to a 34-year-old horse that went through the last war unscathed. But there are also items of more immediate interest. The German Ministry of Propaganda and Public Enlightenment has published a voluminous work which purports to show how English democracy has failed in its mission of spreading real democracy. It is made up of carefully selected quotations from such authors as Lloyd George, Bernard Shaw, Ramsay MacDonald, General Booth of the Salvation Army, from parliamentary debates and similar sources, and probably presents its side of the picture about as well as could be expected. The recent air attack on Dover is described from English sources as having been the greatest air battle that has yet taken place. Over 100 German planes, it is stated, took part in the action, and the explosions from the bombs they dropped were terrific. From Italy, it is reported that the Eastern Squadron of the British Navy, located at Alexandria, is confined to the Eastern Mediterranean as the result of Italian air activity. Italy claims to be the master of the seas in those parts. Much space is devoted to the arrest of British subjects in Japan for alleged espionage. On the other hand, it is stated that Japan is getting worried about the American embargo of war materials and is considering cutting the United States off from its supplies of rubber from Malaya and the Dutch East Indies. The efforts reported as being made in England to develop a home defense to oppose parachute troops and troops landed from airplanes in the expected German descent on England are universally condemned here. It is stated that the entry of the civilian population into the ranks of belligerent troops in defense of their homes is a species of franc-tireur war that will have to be dealt with as such. Furthermore, the attacks by British planes on what are said here to be non-military objectives is taken as justification for similar bombings by German planes when the time comes. Yesterday, an attack on an unnamed hospital in northern Germany is reported, which, however, injured nobody. Mr. Farrell's speech at yesterday's meeting of the Foreign Trade Council is reported in the Börsen Zeitung as being a voice from America that appreciates the situation in advocating trade with a Europe that is under totalitarian leadership. And in connection with the 90th year of service of German municipal libraries, we are reminded that the founder of the system, Friedrich von Rahmer, gained his inspiration in America, where 100 years ago, on a trip down the Mississippi River, he was struck by the way even simple people were able to quote from Plutarch as a result of the village libraries that even then were in existence in America. The really great questions that cropped up in the last month, after hostilities on the continent ceased, are barely touched on today. The reorganization of the French government, which Germans look on with skepticism, since the political leaders involved seem to be the men of the former era. The settlement of Balkan questions, which seems to have been advanced as the result of the recent visits of Balkan statesmen to Berlin and Rome. The advance of Russia in Romania and along the Baltic. The Havana Conference. All these great matters either seem to have registered no progress in the last few days, or in any event have not given rise to newspaper comment. We are ending the month on a very quiet note, which will very likely be the prelude to great events in the coming month of August. For after all, such matters as the new order in Europe, political and economic both, are dependent on a settlement being made with England first. So long as the German and the Italian wars with England are still unfinished, all discussion of the future must be on a tentative basis, and however sure Germans may be of the outcome, the fight with England must be finished before all the great plans for the future can begin to function. In football language, Germany still has the ball. The initiative is with her, and the last plunges over the goal line must be made before the game is over and the celebration can begin. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin, returning you to NBC.
This morning, you have heard from NBC war reporters in London and Berlin. Tomorrow morning, NBC broadcast direct from Rome and London. Now, for the news in our own capital, we take you to the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is Claude Mahoney in Washington. The capital swelters again today, the 13th day of a heat wave that has become almost the most important news in the city. The whole town is lethargic. President Roosevelt, in shirt sleeves and a little green-checked bow necktie, held his regular press conference yesterday, but little real news developed from it. The greatest activity seems to be in the Senate Military Affairs Committee, where members gave a hurry-up okay to the president's proposal to mobilize 320,000 members of the National Guard and Officers Reserve for a year's training. Following this fast approval by the committee, some administrative leaders forecast adoption of the legislation by Congress by the end of next week. Just before the committee approved the Guard bill, it had seemingly dropped the Burke-Wadsworth conscription bill with almost hot potato speed. This rapid change is subject of a great deal of discussion in the Washington gossip chambers today. It appeared that objections to the conscription bill were rising and continued to spread more and more. Many people were insisting that this nation should never enact conscription laws in peacetime, and that a good, spirited campaign for volunteers should be tried first. Some said privately that conscription came too near marking the Democratic Party as a war party, the same label the Republicans tried to pin on it. The congressmen began to hear about conscription from back home, and they saw political dynamite in it. So they quietly continued executive sessions on that bill and immediately put the spotlight on the National Guard and Officers Reserve bill. Now, this bill does not have so many possibilities for objections. Most people seem to agree, of course, that the defense forces of the nation should be built up. But the personal part is what hurts, the part where it comes home. Remember the old song? Part of which went roughly like this. Take my father and my mother, my sister and my brother, but for Pete's sake, don't take me. Well, the Guard bill doesn't have so much of the aspect of compulsion about it. For it's assumed that if you're a member of the National Guard or the Organized Reserves, you have already expressed your willingness to serve in any kind of an emergency. You expressed that when you joined and expressed it voluntarily. So the big objection is largely removed. And there's likely to be written into that bill some very strong hints to employers to rehire the men after the year's training, and also a great deal of leniency toward guardsmen and reservists with dependents. As you know, President Roosevelt's official family is somewhat torn up, what with vacancies to come in the posts of Democratic National Committee chairman and Postmaster General, and if Secretary Wallace resigns, the post of Secretary of Agriculture. And meanwhile, it was hinted around Washington that the administration is trying to induce Lewis Johnson to return to the administration fold, even to a minor job. You remember he was forced out of as Secretary of War in one of those strange moves. The new Republican Secretary of War wanted to put in his own man, and thereby forced out one of President Roosevelt's leading and most loyal workers in the cause of national defense. The boys tried to pin the president down on Johnson's return yesterday afternoon, and he said Johnson was out in California at Bohemian Grove and people weren't in a hurry there. This is Claude Mahoney speaking, and that's the news in Washington at this time.
This is the NBC newsroom in New York. And so concludes this morning's roundup of on-the-spot news broadcasts, which are heard each weekday morning at this same time, in which NBC brings you war reports and observations from the belligerent capitals of Europe. This is the National Broadcasting Company.